I just wanted it to go fast and sound good. Fine. So I put a silly exhaust on it. I currently daily something called a Jaguar XJ Supersport, which is essentially an XJR, but like not with all the crass badging on it. It's like really stealth, but still 5 liter supercharged, 500 horsepower, absolute beast of a thing. And then I've still got my Mark II MX-5, which I've been trying to put a V10 engine in for about 6 years now. Yes, long story. I want to feel the turbo lag. I think it'll just be insane. I want Audi's press
car.
Manual V8, because that's the one Clarkson drove in Tokyo.
And welcome to Fueling Around. I'm Vicky Butler-Henderson.
And I'm Dave Vitti, bringing you the very best in motortainment every single week. Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance.
Now, please don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press follow on Spotify or Apple or wherever you get your podcasts from. Now then, our special guest this week is a man who has been responsible for some of the most watched online car content. He has been a key player on Drive Tribe, and he is now ploughing his own motoring furrow. He is Mike Fernie.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for having me.
That's a pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us. Great to meet you. Big fans of the stuff, obviously, from Drive Tribe, as Vicky said, and now onwards. We often describe people in your sort of situation as living the dream, I think, because you're essentially getting paid to do what most people who are into cars would like to do. Mm-hmm. You were living the dream at Drive Tribe for many years. You're now, obviously, doing your own thing. Does it feel like you're still living the dream, or is it a lot more scary when it's your own name above the door?
It definitely goes both ways, but I'd say the majority of the time I'm definitely living the dream. And there's been some stressful situations where it's suddenly all on you, but also it kind of goes the other way, where all of the success is also like down to you and my small little team. So it's been quite a stressful time. I needed to be quite brave to take the jump, but I'm very happy I've done it.
It's always such a worrying time, isn't it? When you leave the security and safety of something that you've had a salary from, and then you go into the big, scary freelance world.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was like very well paid at Drive Tribe, but it wasn't like a lot of motoring journalism jobs where it's really scrimping the pennies. Like, it was a startup, nice big salary, but I knew there was more out there for me. So I thought, let's take a leap.
Yeah. Now, your backstory is quite interesting, because you weren't sort of born a motoring journalist. So you first studied mechanical engineering university in Edinburgh, which must have been lovely.
Yes, I liked physics and maths at school and thought, right, what are we going to do? So mechanical engineering, I wanted to be in cars somehow, and that seemed like the way to go.
But then you decided, the grass is greener on the other side. I would like to drive cars and review them. And you were on the brink of going to Auto Express magazine, which is a magazine that I was a road tester at, so I know it well.
That wasn't the reason he didn't go there.
No. But that's when the Drive Tribe social media sort of platform pounced and said, we've seen some of the stuff that you've done. We'd love to have you. What was it like that first day when you were employed by Clarkson, Hammond and May in the early days of Drive Tribe?
Yeah, it was pretty nuts. It was a massive startup office in King's Cross, like literally in the station. And the room was full of like sort of 50 odd people, which seemed absolutely mad at the time. I went in there looking for Clarkson, Hammond and May. They weren't there. But the journalists that were in there were still some of my all-time favourites. Guys like Henry Catchpole, Jethro Bovingdon. Drive Tribe had done a frankly amazing job of just going out there and hiring some of the best in the business to come in. I was very much junior. They'd hired me because they saw this platform called Car Throttle, which is where Alex and all of his ecosystem has come from.
Auto Alex that we've had on the podcast before.
And I was part of that. While I was at uni, I was writing for Car Throttle, and Drive Tribe came along and, as far as I'm aware, offered everyone at Car Throttle a job. They just wanted to wipe the whole place and bring them over. But fair play to them, no one went apart from me. Because I thought, wait a minute, that's Clarkson, Hammond and May. Like, that's a serious opportunity. Let's go. So I went for it. And I started off as a junior writer and then worked my way up. The demand for video went up while I was there. YouTube was just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So I went from writing to video.
And you were there for 9 years. So what was the best bit and the worst bit?
Best bit, probably, and it's tough, there's two. Both of them were road trips. One of them was Richard and I going to our favourite roads in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So he took me to his place in the Lake District. He's got a little cottage there.
Yeah.
Went on his road, which was like quite emotional for him. And then we drove from there up to a place called Aberfoyle in the sort of right in the middle of Scotland, which is where my favourite road was. So it's quite nice us sampling each other's roads. And
it was
very Top Gear road trip. It was driving in supercharged V8 cars over the radios, chatting away. That was surreal to go through that. And then the other highlight was taking Richard's Subaru from the Grand Tour. We'd sort of done it up, made it sort of 530 horsepower, absolute beast of an Impreza. And then I took it to my favourite place in the world, which is the Isle of Arran, just off the west coast of Scotland.
Yeah.
It's got a perfect ring road all the way around the island. So it's very, well, it's a lap immediately.
And how many miles in?
It's not much,
I
is it?
I don't know how many miles. But
two?
I've got a time for it.
Oh, yes.
Which I will not say because people will quickly be able to figure out an average speed. But for me, it's Scotland's Isle of Man.
Understood.
And the roads are cracking on it. So if anyone wants a road trip you've probably never been on before, Isle of Arran is the place to go. What's really cool is the Highland Fault comes down from Loch Ness and just keeps going diagonally through Scotland. And the final bit of it goes through Arran. So the top of the island is very mountainous.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom of the island is very lowland. So it's called Scotland in miniature because it's like got everything going on.
Yeah. I mean, the whole situation of being at Drive Tribe for so long, as Vicky says, must have been so surreal. As a kid who grew up watching Top Gear, as we all did, you know, this is the one program every week on a Sunday night that you have to see. Then you're in a situation where you look to one side and you've got Clarkson and May, and you look to the other side and you've got Hammond, and it must have been a proper pinch yourself moment to kind of think, I'm actually working with these guys now. You know, I mean, how bonkers did that feel?
It was nuts. And like, yeah, I was that kid that got home from school, watched all the reruns on day fifth gear as well. And just, I would be encyclopedic. I'd know the scripts off by heart for some of the episodes. So yeah, when those people walked in the room, they were never together. Mm-hmm. But I can think of every single day, the individual days when that voice came from the door behind me. I was like, oh my God, that's Jeremy Clarkson or Richard or James. So yeah, to have those moments, and then like that then stretches to the first shoot with them and then the first time on camera with them. And yeah, it's great having that evidence on YouTube somewhere. It's always nasty to look back at older content. You just cringe inside at what you're doing, but it's pretty cool having a video with Jeremy, James and Richard, some of them numerous, just sitting there. It's very cool.
Absolutely. You know, and I know that obviously they weren't all there at the point at which you decided to exit Drive Tribe. But still, having been there for so long and been such a significant part of your career, well, the mainstay of your career at that point, certainly, is that not a huge risk then? Is that something that causes you sleepless nights in terms of, am I going to turn my back on this? Am I going to set up on my own? Is it the right thing to do? I mean, that can't be an easy decision.
That was the toughest bit. Like, actively moving out from under Richard, because by that time he'd taken over Drive Tribe. Yeah. He was the boss.
Is this, what, 2021, that sort of time, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. So that, in terms of the worst moment at Drive Tribe, it was probably then, November 2021, the whole thing was shutting down. The experiment had not worked. Creating a social media platform for cars, and we were told, right, sorry, doors are closing. But then Richard himself was shown a spreadsheet. There was a green line in it, the only green line, and it was the YouTube channel and the social media channels. So it kind of sprung back from there, but Richard took over Drive Tribe. He became the boss and we cracked on from there. I'd essentially spent my entire career either, an employee of all three or Richard himself.
Yeah.
And then when it narrowed down to just Richard and the small team, you then got closer and closer with him. And, you know, he's a very busy man, but he was very generous with his time. Mm-hmm. And we'd create a whole bunch of content.
But that must make it all the more difficult then when you have had that conversation to leave. So how did that conversation go? What did you start with? Richard.
We were at Lando Circuit. We were filming my MG versus his MG on track. And we didn't really have a relationship that was like super deep, having chats with each other and that sort of thing. But at the start of the day, I just said, during the lunch break, can I just grab you for a chat? And you could just see his face because he was like, oh no,
oh no, what's
that
this gonna
can't be good because we don't do this. Like, yeah. That's not a thing. And yeah, it started off, like, I think he was upset and a bit gutted that I was leaving. But what was great was almost immediately, it was really positive. And it's like, right, how are we going to do this? I think he was aware that there'd been quite a lot of quite messy YouTube breakups in the industry. And he's like, right, how do we do this so that it's good for you and good for Drive Tribe? And it keeps it all happy. And I'd like to think we could be seen as a bit of a template of how to do it because it has gone really well. I'm still very pally with the guys at Drive Tribe. I'm actually seeing Richard on Saturday. It'll be an event on stage with them, which should be really cool. And yeah, it's all been hunky-dory. Whenever I need a bit of footage in my videos that harks back to an old Drive Tribe video, that's all good.
Yeah.
It's a really nice place.
And that's great, isn't it? The fact that it's an adult situation and it is you know, like, as you say, like an amicable divorce or an amicable separation.
And we did that on camera. There's a leaving video where Richard and I shake hands, wish each other well. And yeah, it's great. It's not none of these, you know, people online wondering what's going on. It's all there.
Proper conscious uncoupling.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think, you know, it's good for both channels as well, isn't it? Because, you know, what's the point in being at war with somebody and being petty and kind of almost, you know, it doesn't really achieve anything, does it?
Sometimes, but often, actually, people have said when you're on Top Gear and when you're in Fifth Gear, you know, oh, you know, is there lots of rivalry? It's like, actually, no, because this whole industry is so small when you get into it that everybody just has to help everybody else out, really.
Well, yeah, and also, I think you all benefit from the success that you all have.
Point.
You know, in many ways, you were talking before about Auto Alex, for example, and, you know, other people who are very much your contemporaries, but you've all got a vested interest in this whole world and this whole market being as healthy and successful as you can, because people watch Alex's videos and then they'll be suggested ones of yours and then vice versa.
Exactly.
And, you know, so actually it's not really competition, is it? I don't think. Yeah. And I think also you're all quite different. You know, you all sort of have your own little, I know it's all car content, but you have your own sort of niches and specialisms, and Alex's content is different to your content, which is different to other people.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's areas of media that are quite cutthroat, but I think with YouTube, what's great is something I've realised, there's so much space for us all.
Yeah.
There's not a huge amount of direct competition going on. Mm. The audience is there for each channel. The sponsors are there for each channel. It's not, oh, he's got that, therefore he's kind of nicked it from me. It's just not a thing.
Yeah.
I think YouTube, honestly, is only getting started. Yeah. I think that the next 5-10 years are just going to see YouTube almost take over the entire streaming. It's already, I think last year it surpassed Netflix as the biggest streaming platform. People are sitting down for their dinner and putting on YouTube, which is just nuts. So I quite like my timing in regards to that, because I think that's only going to go up. Now the onus is on us to create our long content, because that's what the new demand is. It's to replace Netflix and Amazon Prime. There's no point in putting out a 15-minute car review anymore. It needs to be an hour-long epic that people just lock into.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, talking about your channel then, Mike Fernie is what it's called. Obviously, same name as you. That's not easy to remember.
I trialed a few, but everything just sounded really crap. So I thought, let's just...
It's a difficult one, isn't it? You know, and then you sort of think, well, why don't you just call it me, you know? And, so anyway, so, I mean, early figures, you've been going for 6 months or so now, which is still very much in its infancy. I mean, the figures are huge. I mean, you're into six figures for your films already, which I don't know whether that's what you expected, whether it's exceeded your expectations or not. But I think even more so, and with the greatest respect, it's pretty niche stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, we're not talking about Ferraris going sideways in slow-mo.
We're talking about
taking cylinders apart and you know, sort of, you know, the construction of gaskets and things.
Yep.
I mean, this is...
Tapping into your engineering background.
Exactly. And what I love is how much of an audience there clearly is for that.
Yeah.
I think YouTube is, that's what it's so good for. You almost can't go too niche on YouTube. People will search for exactly what they want and the content will be there for it. So although doing engine stuff, that's like the majority of it. I do some other car stuff around it, but engines are the main thing, and that could be seen as too niche, but yeah, people seem to lock into it. People will happily watch an hour of just dismantling an engine, putting all the parts on the carpet and having a look at damage or what's good about them. People love that stuff. There's like a methodology to stripping down an engine. Like, it doesn't matter what engine it is. It could be a Formula One engine or it can be your mum's Nissan Micra engine. Yeah.
This is the formula to do it.
They've all got the same bits in them. Some are just more special than others.
Yeah. So it's don't do like, this before you've done
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So it's almost like the audience already knows what's coming, but they watch it exactly because of that. Yeah. They're like, oh, I can't wait till he gets to the bottom end. And you flip it around, you start doing the bottom end. And
there's a piston ring.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it's also, people like also their own knowledge being backed up.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't think too many people are learning like directly from my videos. Quite a lot of them, they know about engines. They just like that being solidified through my videos. So they almost like telling their girlfriend or partner, oh, he's going to move on to this next, and then I do, and they're like, see, told you. So I think there's something about backing up people's knowledge.
Yeah. Brace yourself, love. He's going to take the gasket off in a minute.
Become a cornrows. Yeah, exactly that. But I love it. I'm loving it.
Having built such a good base with Drive Tribe, how then did you tempt a proportion of them to come over with you?
I think that one of the downsides with the Drive Tribe channel while I was there, we'd built it to 3 million subscribers and a huge proportion of them were there for the trio. Mm. So we would still, you know, Clarkson hadn't been on the channel for something like 3 or 4 years. Mm. And there'd be comments on the video saying, where's Clarkson? So Drive Tribe was so solidified around that trio. But what I was there to do was create content that the proper car audience would still click on. So the car or the engine or whatever road trip we're doing, make that interesting enough that it doesn't need to be one of the trio. And that meant sponsors could come in and, you know, they probably wouldn't be able to afford the amount Richard would charge, but little old me would be able to hoover up the rest. So I guess I had my own little area of Drive Tribe where a certain amount of subscribers were sitting. And the question was, when I left, how much of that would come across. Mm. No one, I chatted to so many YouTubers, fellow YouTubers about it, and no one could tell me roughly
the magic formula.
But there isn't necessarily a template for it anyway, though, Mike, is there? Because, you know, this is still a new world and whatnot, and your situation isn't necessarily one that's been replicated by people for years and decades. Mm-hmm. So you're still learning, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted a certain amount of subscribers by a certain time. And what I've learned from guys like Alex and others that have left a big channel is you always underestimate it. Mm. I tried to be like, no, I'm not going to make that mistake. It's going to be this amount by this amount of time. But it just totally massively surpassed that. So, you know, if you told me the numbers now, back in sort of November, I would have absolutely grabbed your hand. Mm. So, yes, it's been really good.
It is. It's all numbers, isn't it? Really? Yeah. I mean, it's the channel, your channel, every channel. Does it live and die on the numbers, essentially?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, it live and dies very much on sponsorships these days. That's kind of the way YouTube works. Ad revenue has gone way down from its heyday sort of 10 years ago. So you now need to have the ad revenue plus some sponsors supporting the channel. And they are very much looking at the numbers on your videos and how many people are watching that ads integration. So you do need to keep up. YouTube is a beast that just, it needs that momentum to keep it going. If you don't, it can start fluctuating and the algorithm can really start to hurt you. So it's something you need to keep on top on. But what is really nice is fresh channels. YouTube thinks, okay, you're new to the platform, let's help you out, let's get you going. So I think that's showing. I think also something compared to the Drive Tribe channel, kind of like I was mentioning, so much the audience were there for the trio. So there would be a portion of the audience that very much wouldn't watch my content. Mm. And that would lead to these fluctuations in views. Well, now I've got my own channel. People won't have subscribed to my channel unless they like me specifically.
Yeah.
So the consistency on the views is really nice compared to what it was like at Drive Tribe. There's a thing, after your videos come out for half an hour, YouTube will give you a ranking of how it's doing versus the other videos, 1 to 10, 1 being good, 10 being rubbish. And at Drive Tribe, you'd just be panicking at the 29th minute waiting to refresh for 30 to see the ranking come out. If it was good, fantastic, dopamine flooding your brain. If it wasn't, ruins your evening. You're going into work with someone saying, that's all really great. How are you going to sort that out? Well, now it's all on me. And as I say, the consistency is there, because when my face appears on a thumbnail now, my audience wants to click it rather than, it's not a Richard video, it's not an Izzy video, it's not a James May video. I'll leave it.
Back to the beginning, I think. What were your earliest memories of cars?
Do you know what? I thought you'd ask me that, so I've brought a prop.
Ooh.
Oh, God, we like a prop.
Ooh, it's intriguing. A little tiny car.
This is my Corgi Jaguar XK120. Yep. Sorry for the audio viewers only. It's a Corgi black and white Jaguar XK120. This was in my the box of toys at my grandma and granddad's house, and it belonged to my dad and uncle.
That exact car?
Yes. So this is from, I think, the mid-60s. Mm-hmm. It's a bit, it needs a full restoration. But
well, you're the man to do it, Mike.
This is the car that I've kept with me the whole time. When I saw this in the toy box, I thought, that is nice. What is that? And I've been obsessed with Jaguar ever since. So
I think
yes,
Theo Pepita's got one of those, hasn't he? I mean, like a real one.
It wouldn't surprise me.
I think he has, because
he's on the dream car list.
He won't admit it, but he's a Jag man. He's a proper Jag man. In fact, when we need to talk about Jags as well, we'll do in a little bit, because I think there are similar.
I thought about bringing my Jag here. It's ULEZ exempt, but
I know. Isn't that mad that you can have the most exotic, old, wonderful, big engine things, and they're ULEZ
5 litre V8.
Yeah, and you can bring them into London without having to pay.
Do you know what? While we're just on that subject, because I did notice there was a video that you put out, which essentially was why you left Drivetribe.
Yes. Right?
In fact, that's what it was called.
Yep.
And it's 20-odd minutes or whatever of explaining, you know, why that decision process happened. And I don't know where you filmed it, but you're surrounded by Jags. You're in a yard, right?
I
start watching this film. Have you seen it, right?
Yeah.
And I'm a bit like, there's an XKR, and I'm like, they're all Jags. Like, every one of them is Jags. Yeah. I mean, it's like a whole graveyard of different
100%.
Jags.
It's
and
a very
then
special
so
place.
It made me think that obviously they must be your car of choice.
Yes, that was Swallow's Jaguar. They're down Somerset, down my way, big Jaguar specialist, and they've very kindly allowed me to kind of use their place as a base for my videos. So I'd say half of my videos that are just to kind of sit down and talking videos with stuff going on beside me, they're all filmed at Swallow's, and it's the best set. It's almost like it's definitely not a scrappy. Like, there's lots of nice Jags there, but I kind of think of it almost like the set of Scrap Heap Challenge. There's so much stuff in the background that it just looks cool no matter where you are. So I can just plonk down anywhere and start presenting, and there'll probably be a nice XJS or a XKR in the background. Yeah. That's awesome. But I've always been a Jag man since 3 years old, since 97. I currently daily a 5 litre supercharged Jag, so it's still going strong.
Absolutely.
So dare I ask if your first car was a Jaguar, and what were those early days like? Were you a neat freak car, or did you just not really care much and run it on fumes each day?
I've always been an old British fan. So my first ever car, I wanted it to be an MG ZR, but I couldn't afford the insurance because the ZR was like the boy racer version. So I had to get the granny Rover 25 and then put all the ZR bits on it to make me look like a boy racer. But I absolutely loved that car. Everyone else was getting Minis and Fiestas and leasing Fiat 500s and stuff. And there was me with my £900 Rover 25, head gasket blue, because of course it did.
Of course.
I absolutely loved that thing. And what was a really nice, everyone wants their first car back, and I drove that car for a bit, but then sold it and then went to an MX-5 as my second car. I went Alpha GTV first, wrote that off, and then got an MX-5. But yes, this Rover, I absolutely loved it. And I was driving home one day, and it was a Lotus Press car from London up to Edinburgh. I was driving past a barracks just outside Edinburgh, and there was a red MG ZR in the car park of the barracks. I thought, I used to have one of them. It's red as well. That's really cool. And I get closer to it, and the reg on it is SG51HEU. The moss had come up all around it. The grass was all up. It was rusting away. The tires were all down. So my first car was sitting abandoned in the car park of this barracks. And I thought, I have to save that.
Yeah.
Like how many people, how many people get that opportunity? Yeah. Like so many people's first cars get scrapped. So I phoned up the base and it was some Lance Corporal that was currently in Afghanistan at the time, who'd driven it about as his local car, but then he was away on active duty. So the car was just left abandoned.
Yeah. And you just happened to drive past it?
I just happened to drive past it. So I phoned up. He allowed me to have the car for free. Very nice of him. We dragged it down, fully restored it, like proper nut and bolt restoration. And then everyone was like, okay, and then you kept it. You've still got your first car. No, I felt like I'd kind of had my time with it. So we sold it off for a military charity. And it was £300 off being a world record for a Rover 25.
What was the price?
I think it sold for £7,800. And I think 8.1 was the world record for like, but that car had like 30 miles on it. This thing had like 70,000, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you had that car, first of all, were you a neat freak or were you a bit sloppy?
I don't know. I just wanted it to go fast and sound good. Fine. So I put a silly exhaust on it. As I say, I got the MGZR wing and front grille and the big wheels on it, which scraped in the arches, but I didn't really care. So yeah, I was just all about feeling like a motoring journalist, to be honest. I just wanted to feel like I was driving something quickly. But no, great car. I thoroughly recommend a Rover 25. There's not many left, but if you can, great first car.
Absolutely right. More about that in a second. Before we do that, quick bit of mid-show housekeeping. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. So What followed the first car then? What sort of route or lineage are you going down in your early motoring days?
So again, I just wanted something cool that I wanted to be seen in and would drive well. So I went Alpha, I went GTV, 2-litre twin spark. And then I went, after that, straight to MX-5, which I still have. Because, yeah, it's one of the best cars I've ever made.
Well, it's funny, actually. There's two things here. A, have you noticed that pretty much every one of our guests has had an MX-5 at some point, which I think is significant. But it links us beautifully onto the fact that you still got the MX-5. What else is in the Fernie fleet, if you like, at the time of recording?
Yeah, so I've got this thing. I should probably go to a therapist about it, but it's I look for cars that people in my past have had, and then I sort of one-up them. So my granddad had a 2-litre Mondeo Mark II. I've got the ST200.
Yeah.
My dad had a Rover 600, the Honda engine one. Yeah. I've got a 620 Ti, the turbo one. So I'm like trying to one-up people for my past for whatever reason.
I think there could be quite a deep dive psychologically.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, exactly. just the way that we're sat in these comfy chairs, I almost feel like we could be some kind of like sort of therapist for you.
I've even done it myself. So first car, Rover 25, currently on my driveway, I've got an MGZR 160, which was the sort of Lotus VVC engined K-series. So that's my little track rally car. And then I currently daily something called a Jaguar XJ Supersport, which is essentially an XJR, but like not with all the crass badging on it. It's like really stealth, but still 5-liter supercharged, 500 horsepower.
Sounds great.
Beast of a thing.
Yeah.
And then I've still got my Mark II MX-5, which I've been trying to put a V10 engine in for about six years now. Yes, long story. But for the last five or six years.
I know people have put V8s in them before, but...
So there's this amazing little company in Norfolk called they're called Bevan Davidson International, but they own a brand called Connaught, who were in Formula One back in the 1950s. And in the 90s they made a 2-liter V10, which is about this size, and it fits perfectly into our Mazda MX-5, because it's not that much longer than a four-cylinder. So this thing's like 12,000 RPM, 2-litre, only like 250 horsepower, but my God, the sound it'll create.
Yeah.
It's not finished yet, and it's probably still a while away, but I'm not giving up on it. They have my MX-5. It'll come back one day, and it'll be quite unique.
Let's just hope, though, that the upgrade... the brakes at the same time.
I'll throw the kitchen sink at it. Once the engine is done, absolutely. Like, all the
mega
budget will be thrown at it.
Mega.
We'll see.
God, power to weight ratio in that would be phenomenal.
I know.
What is the poster that is still pinned up on the wall that you have yet to achieve?
XJ220. I just want to drive one and have a go in one. But yeah, they're just going up and up and up in price. But
what money are they on at the minute?
A really dodgy one will be about early 300s.
Okay.
But a nice one will probably be about £500,000 now.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I'd say that or the Porsche Carrera GT. They're the two that will be like, okay, done. Yeah. My attainable dream car is an Audi R8 manual. In fact, you've done a video with Henry Catchpole driving the exact car I want. I want Audi's press
car,
manual
V8,
because that's the one Clarkson drove on Top Gear. And I've offered them far too much money for it, and they've said, no, we don't do that. We don't sell our press cars.
They need to be on, exactly. They need to keep hold of their heritage themselves.
Yes, but oh my God.
But you can have a drive in it, though.
I have. I've filmed it since seeing it in your video. I thought, they have that car. Bloody hell, straight on the emails. But yes, that's my sort of attainable. But XJ220 is the dream, that teardrop shape. Over 200 miles an hour. Have you had a go at 220?
Yeah.
Any good?
It's unbelievably awkward to look out of, reverse, park, see. But boy, oh boy, you feel like you're in a spaceship.
Nice.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I want to feel the turbo lag. I think it'll just be insane.
it's not one for Waitrose multi-story car.
No, it's not.
Is it?
No,
but
it's not.
My pal Ben Collins bought one about 3 months ago.
Yeah.
So I think that's my way in.
Yes, they are the keys.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, perfect. do a little try before you buy type of thing.
I think he's very precious about it, rightfully. But we'll see.
Yeah, listen, if you don't ask, you don't get money. Exactly. You ask the question. The question of favourites often comes up when it comes to cars, and obviously people that have more than one car, such as yourself. Mm. I'm going to phrase it this way. If the hypothetical repo man was to come knocking, right, and was taking away everything, but to leave you with one car and one car only from what you currently have in your Fernie fleet, which one is it and why?
I could think about it too much, but I think just straight, the one that's come to my mind is my Mondeo ST200.
Okay.
I was very attached to my granddad when I was a kid. I play the bagpipes because of him. I'm into military stuff because of him.
Yeah.
I was a runner at uni because of him.
Yeah.
So he had a huge influence. So I think that car, whenever I get into it, just the seats, the ashtray, the steering wheel, it just immediately reminds me of him. So yes, I think that would be the one I'd keep. It's currently getting an engine swap. So that should be
V10?
No. I wish. Half though. Five cylinder.
Lovely.
Five cylinder turbo. So yeah, that should be exciting. But yeah, I think that would be the one. It'd be very sad to get rid of my NG Rovers because I'm very attached to them. But yeah, I think the Mondeo.
And when you go to the supermarket, which car do you take for that the Tesco's trip? Other supermarkets are available.
Currently, it's the XJ. It's my big comfy Jag XJ with the massage seats and nice big boot.
What MPG do you get to that?
Do you know what? For 500 horsepower, not bad. I get 27.
Do you?
Okay. And, I daily did M5 during the Drive Tribe days. I have Charger Hellcat, similar horsepower, similar size of engines. Those things were in the teens. So 27,
that's
I will take that. That JLR supercharged V8 is surprisingly frugal. It's good.
Back to the channel. How far in advance, because as I say, this stuff isn't just thrown together. It isn't just randomly released as and when. There's a structure to all of this, as there is with anybody that does this professionally. How far in advance do you plan the films? And in fact, what is the criteria in terms of choosing what the subject matter should be?
Good question. The thing that I always write down when I've got a spare half a day and I think, right, let's come up with some ideas. Mm. The thing I like to write down is niche but mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
So something that it's niche enough that people haven't really bothered creating content around it, but it's mainstream enough that everyone knows what it is within the car space.
Yeah.
So my biggest ever video until recently on my channel was about the engineering of a cat's eye.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought a cat's eye off eBay for 20 quid. Don't know what someone had hacked out of the road somewhere and they were just selling it on eBay.
Mm.
And they're actually amazing things. Did you know they're self-cleaning?
No.
I did know that, which blows your mind.
It's mental.
But in how, for example?
So it's
without ruining your video.
No, that's fine. No,
so it's a little cat and a little mouse comes up. What is it alive?
I should have brought it with me. I wish I'd hiked it here. It's bloody heavy. But
tell us.
It's basically, it's made of cast iron. And then there's a rubber plunger in the middle. And then the rubber plunger is where the reflective beads are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why a cat's eye, it kind of looks like cast iron. It's got that white bit poking
yeah.
up.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
the rubber bit. And then within the cast iron, there's a reservoir. So rainwater goes in and under the rubber and pools in this reservoir so that when you drive over it, the rubber plunges downwards into the reservoir
oh, wow.
and the beads get a little wash. There's a wow. a wiper. I wish I'd brought it. There's a wiper as part of the rubber, but the wiper is really stiff while the bit that plunges is nice and soft. So when the car goes over it, it plunges down and wipes its eyes against the wiper and comes back up. So if you drive over an old school cat's eye, yeah. you are doing community service. You're actually cleaning it. It's amazing.
I never knew that.
So clever.
What an invention.
I didn't know how it did it. That's incredible.
Next time, I'll bring it.
Yeah, no, do. I mean, I just assumed that when you said it was self-cleaning, I just kind of thought, well, when it rains, there'll be rainwater no. goes on the thing and then that will clean it. But I didn't realise it was quite as, yeah. well, as sophisticated and complex as that.
I'm going to go and drive over right. every single cat's eye on the way home.
Exactly.
Clean up and freshen up.
Yeah, yeah. So that, to me, that was the perfect example of...
Great engineering.
Everyone knows what a cat's design. Eye is. It's as mainstream as it gets to yeah. anyone that drives, but... Who's ever thought about the engineering of it? That's like the niche
but
side of it.
But even yeah. without the engineering, it's just one of those brilliant inventions, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's an absolute necessity, but what a genius invention.
Percy
I mean,
Do you know Shaw. who made it?
Percy Shaw.
Percy
Sir
Shaw.
Percy Shaw.
Sir Percy
oh,
Shaw.
From in the 1930s.
It's just when you think about those sort of things. I mean, this actually, by comparison, this is nowhere near as clever, I don't think, but I think it's still a brilliant idea. I met someone recently whose grandfather was the person behind, you know, on the wheel nuts on trucks and buses and things, you know, you've got the little arrows.
Arrows, yes.
Yeah. So you know what they're for?
I don't.
So
this could be my next video.
Honestly, this could be your next video. So I'd seen these all the time and never thought about it. So on the wheel nuts on you know, sort of heavy vehicles, trucks, buses, etc., you've got those little plastic arrows, right? So the idea is that when you tighten the nuts up, you then line the arrows up like that, which means that if one of the nuts is loosened, it goes like that.
See.
So you can visually see from a distance
no way.
Whether one of those is loosened. So as long as they're all pointing that way, the way that they were set, then you know that those nuts
and
are
you
all
walk
tight.
Past, quick check.
Absolutely. And if you've got a haulage company and you've got a dozen trucks with 18 wheels each,
you'll
and
save
whatever,
so much time.
You can just instantly see. But what a genius invention.
Wow. And the grandfather of somebody that you met invented that.
Yeah.
That's yeah. cool. That's yeah. very cool.
And I kind of thought, I love
truck
stuff
stops
like that.
Now, I'm going to be inspecting and be like, mate, yeah. you're... There's a,
absolutely.
A
that's absolutely.
You're left offside.
Yeah. or you could just go and move them just out of badness, couldn't you?
Oh, Mr. Vitti.
But, you know, that would be perfect.
Yeah.
That'd
yeah.
be really, really good. And another, like, my second best video currently, as you know, it's surpassed Cat's Eye. There's that amazing footage in Le Mans 99 of that Mercedes that takes off.
Yes.
It takes flight.
Yeah.
So, again, that bit of footage where it just leaves the track and goes off into the woods, that's, like, ingrained in people's minds with social media. It pops up on Instagram every other day, that bit of that clip of that car. So I went to Germany. Mercedes has kept that car hidden ever since. Mm. They basically closed the door on it. And some private collector somewhere has somehow managed to buy the car from Mercedes and has put it in his collection in a museum. So the first thing I saw that, I was like, oh my God, I've been looking to film that car for yeah. years. Let's go do that. And yeah, I think that's over 600,000 now because it's a car that no one's filmed with. So it's immediately niche in the content yeah. space, but it's a car that everyone immediately recognizes. Second you have a thumbnail of this car inverting on track, people are like, oh yeah, I know that one. Mm. Let's give that a watch. So that's what I aim for.
Did you work out the aerodynamics of how it had happened then? Did you
exactly.
use your engineering
yes.
prowess?
I actually did a project at uni, my mechanical engineering degree. I did a whole project on why that car took off. The
before you'd even seen the car years before?
I had the script ready to go.
Wow.
I just dug out some old folders.
Perfect.
And put
genius.
It out. But yes, I went through all the instabilities
yeah.
in it. It's
yeah,
pretty
yeah.
cool.
Yeah. What does the future hold then for you and the channel? Are you hoping to get millions of viewers and then cashing out? What's the plan?
Who knows? I think, do you know what? I think there is a world where TV companies or streaming platforms do start to offer YouTube channels just to buy them out and just take their content from YouTube and put it elsewhere. In the same way that a TV program can just get bought out by ITV or
yeah.
BBC or whoever. I can see that happening. Whether YouTubers will actually say yes to it, like, you know, the potential earnings, if they're doing well enough that they're getting looked at, might surpass anything that could be offered. And also having that autonomy as well would be huge. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see where YouTube goes. In terms of my own stuff right now, I'm just keeping going, making content that is performing as well as it does. Like, the numbers don't lie. Like, if you put out a good video that's got a good title and a good thumbnail on YouTube, it will perform. So I quite like that kind of YouTube theory being vindicated video to video. So if I can just keep that up, keep that momentum going, that also allows, from a commercial standpoint, some other gigs happening, like some live events, some stage stuff. Other people just see the presenting I do and think, oh, that guy might be quite good for this. So hopefully I can work with some other brands as well. I've got a few already in my emails right now that could be really cool. People that, you know, they've seen me look at certain engines and they've said, right, well, can you please come and look at our engine? Because it's really cool and here's why. So I think more and more of that will be really great. And yeah, if I can make a living and keep the autonomy I've got just now, I'll be very happy.
That's brilliant. Just keep on doing what you're doing and keep sort of raising those figures, because it's a numbers game, isn't it, at the end of the day, ultimately?
Yeah, it is quite scientific at the end of it. As I say, like, people can complain about a video not doing very well, but you can break it down to there is a science behind it as to why it hasn't done well. If you fix those things, it can pick back up. So I do, aside from my channel, I do consultancy for some of my other sort of friendly channels, guys like James May, Ben Collins, those guys. So I quite enjoy taking that YouTube theory and applying it to stuff that I'm not even doing and just seeing how things work, trying to get those view graphs to go like this. And that's quite fulfilling as well. So yeah, there's a few aspects to what's going on.
Well, talking of numbers games, we've got our own numbers game, haven't we? Before indeed. We get into final question territory, because we need you to take part in our quick fire round, please, okay. Mr. Mike Fernie. It's called 0 to 60, cleverly, because you'll have almost exactly 60 seconds on the clock to answer as many quick fire questions as you can.
I thought it was going to be 60 questions.
No.
Absolute slog.
No, because I
would be a slog.
Question 39.
Otherwise, I'd have to write 60 questions every week, you know, and I don't have time for that. Okay. When I say it's almost exactly 60 seconds, that's because my stopwatch isn't really behaving itself at the moment. So we might need your old school thing.
And is this general knowledge, or is this just me
Well, there might be. You can pass if you're not sure. You know, it's essentially you've got to answer as many as you can in the time. We will tot up the score at the end.
Fine.
And then you will be the envy of your engineering friends in the automotive
world. Is there a current record? It fluctuates.
I can't tell you that. That's classified information at the moment. Okay. But I mean, just do as well as you possibly can.
I will.
I think that you'll be fine. If you're not sure, say pass. I think you're a competitive man, Mike Fernie, I think you'll give this your all.
I'm already locked in.
I know. Yeah. I know. I can tell.
You are alert in that chair.
I can see that you're primed for this. Okay. So, Vicky Butler Henderson, if you can prepare the stopwatch, please.
Preparing.
I will make sure we're ready to launch our first question.
Okay.
What we'll do as well is that when you hear this noise, that'll be the time up.
Okay, you'll honk.
Okay. Yeah. I will honk. So, okay. You're ready, Vicky, I'm ready. First question after you goes like this.
V8, V10 or V12?
V10.
Jaguar or Mercedes?
Jag.
Who would play you in a Drive Tribe movie?
Mark Ruffalo.
True or false? Richard Hammond is taller than an emperor penguin.
True.
Ferrari or Lamborghini?
Ferrari.
What's your favourite sandwich filling?
Peanut butter.
Top Gear or Fifth Gear?
Top Gear, sorry.
What's your favourite?
I've done both, you're fine.
What's your favourite Rover?
75.
What's your favourite river?
Fourth.
Name the coolest TV car of all time.
It's a movie car, the Supra from Fast and Furious.
On a bacon sandwich, red sauce or brown?
None, I like it plain.
Spice Girls or All Saints?
All Saints.
American Muscle or Italian Flair?
Italian Flair.
How are we doing on time, Vicky?
Keep going.
Do you like Formula One?
Yes.
Ford or Vauxhall?
Ford.
Did it.
Right.
Okay. TV car. What was that?
Listen, it's difficult. And you know, like they always say with quizzes, they say it's easy when you're watching at home. And when you're watching at home, it's easy. When you're in that hot seat, it's nerve-wracking.
I've been on Pointless. Right, Tiff, Nadell and I were on Pointless. And first of all, the guy, Alistair, who says to me, he says, and so tell us who you are and where you're from. And he looked at me and I just couldn't even remember my name. It was quite pathetic.
I'm going to give you 15. It's a very good score.
Is it the best?
It's a very good score.
Oh, no.
It's a very good score.
Okay.
I can't say whether it's the best or not because I think somebody else got very close to that and I can't remember who they were. But it's a very good score, Mike Fernie, and you should be proud of that. Yeah. You will be the engineering envy of all of your contemporaries.
Thank you.
Time for the final question now. So this is going to be your dream drive. So we need you to paint the picture for us. Where are you? Who are you with? What are you listening to? But most importantly, what are you driving?
Okay. That is... Okay, I'll get to the car last because I need time to think on that. But I know it will be the ring road of the Isle of Arran. Going from Brodick past Corry up to Lochranza in the north. It is... They've just relayed it. It is a stunning piece of road.
Smooth tarmac.
Smooth tarmac. Oh. And the bikers all use it. But us car guys haven't woken up to it. So... visit Arran, hit me up. We need to get more people to the Isle of Arran to experience that. In the car with me would be my dad and my granddad. So that immediately means it can't be a two-seater. I think it would be a Lancia Delta Integrale Evo 2.
Oh, nice.
So that we can get us all in. But left-hand drive on that road means you can take it right up to the edge of the road, use all the road. Probably has a crunchy third gear, but it'll be fine. And it's got just enough power because you're kind of up the hill and then down to Lochranza. It would absolutely fly down that road. Not too big, not too small, ideal. So yeah, I think that'd be it.
It sounds perfect, doesn't it?
Can I come?
Let's make it happen.
There's another seat
in there, isn't there?
Squeeze me
you
in.
Know, I don't think we can squeeze it to a 5, but I reckon we could squeeze you in and make it a 4. I mean, it just sounds perfect.
Yeah, Delta Integrale, it was one of the first properly legendary cars I ever drove.
Yeah.
I had a very nice friend of the family that lent me their Evo 2, and it was just like, oh, this is what a good car feels like. This is awesome. How do I do this more?
Yeah.
That'd be the one.
I tell you what, you can take the extra seat. I will meet you at the pub at the end for G&T's.
Distillery.
Distillery.
Lochranza has a very nice distillery.
I mean, listen,
beautiful.
This.
And we'll all go home with a jumper made by the sheep from Arran.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Lovely. It sounds almost perfect. Yeah. And just about wraps up this episode of Fueling Around, brought to you by Adrian Flux, as UK's largest specialist insurance broker. Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs, helping save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance.
And don't forget, if you haven't already, to check out the YouTube channel called Mike Fernie. And a very, very big thank you to our special guest today, Mike Fernie. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been awesome.
No, it's been really, really good. Thank you very much indeed. It's been great having you here. Make sure that you press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you again very soon. Until then, bye-bye.